Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show. I'm your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. If you were wondering, is Mallory back this week? The answer is no. Once again, you have been duped. This is the greatest hits. We're running some of our favorites, some of the most controversial, some of the most surprising, some of the ones about haunted dolls, letters we have received in the last calendar year. So you're going to get a healthy heaping of advice from Dear Prudence, but it's not going to be given by me right now because I'm not really here. Maybe you'll see me next week. Maybe we're just going to keep doing this. Would you please read our next letter?
Yes. Subject line, cold feet. Dear Prudence, my fiancé and I have been together for 7 years now and engaged for the past 5. And every time we try to move forward with the wedding, something happens and we postpone it for a later date. I should note that I don't live with him, nor do I have a copy of his house key. He doesn't want me to have one for some weird reason, and I respected his wishes and stopped asking for one. In fact, every time I'm about to move in with him the month or two before we're supposed to get married, something happens. The first time, he was moving and didn't want to get married in transit. The second time, he let his friend, who is going through a divorce, live with him for 2 months, so we had to postpone again. Then his father died, and then he moved again to be closer to his mother, and then he took in another friend who needed a place to stay. This keeps happening, and the latest postponement came at a time when I needed to renew my lease, but wasn't sure if I was moving in with him or not. I don't have an issue with him helping his friends. What I have an issue with is that he talks about how since we're going to get married, that we're a team, but he only gave me a heads up on them moving in after the fact. I never got to have a discussion with him about how this might affect our relationship and plans. Our wedding that was supposed to be in October has been canceled, and he didn't seem to even care, and overall, he seems to have an attitude towards me. It's like he's got tunnel vision because it's his friends, and forget any plans or promises made with me. I'm getting tired of having to put our plans on hold because he's got to play the knight in shining armor. Sometimes I feel like I'm being too sensitive about all this, but the few family and friends that I've told about this have all said I'm not wrong for being upset. They don't think he wants to get married, and honestly, I'm starting to think so too. I'm tempted to just call everything off, the engagement and relationship, but I feel stuck due to our long history, and I don't know what to do. Any advice?
Lindy, I just want you to know that originally this letter was roughly 3 times longer than this.
Wow.
With just like further detail on how many times this dude has called off their wedding.
Right. I mean, don't get married, obviously.
I mean, I honestly don't know that she could get married. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know that getting married to this guy is an option.
Right. But what is, I mean, what is their relationship? I mean, there's nothing, you know, usually it seems like when people are conflicted about, you know, not wanting to break up, they list some things that they like about the person.
Right. This does not have you that. Know, that was not something that I edited out, by the way. There was never any of that in here.
There's just nothing, you know, just, oh, well, we put in 7 years, so I guess we should stick with it.
Yep.
Which is not...
And I think that's what it is, right? Like, the only thing that the letter writer mentions is towards the end is, I feel stuck due to our long history. Just don't.
is my advice. Don't feel stuck because of that. Like, that is the sunk cost fallacy. And I understand it's a little dismissive to say, like, just stop feeling that way and make a decision. But, like, you know, you just wrote an incredibly long letter to an advice columnist, basically giving a list of reasons why you think this guy doesn't want to marry you. And I agree with you. He doesn't want to marry you. He does want to keep putting it off indefinitely. He will continue to prioritize everyone else in his life before you. This is not a series of accidents. These are a series of choices. He doesn't want to marry you. The long history between the two of you is not an incentive to stay. It is a millstone that will keep you from moving in a direction that actually makes you happy. So if you want, you can stick with this guy for as long as he's willing to jerk you around. I'm sure he would be willing to pretend to want to set a wedding date a couple more times and then invite a bunch of other people to move in with him instead. But getting married to him is not an option. You can either keep getting rejected by him while you're with him, or you can say, I'm done here. I have sufficient information to know that even if we got married tomorrow, I would not feel like I was marrying someone who was excited about me. You got to walk away.
Yeah. Generally, you know, if you can, if you're putting up, if you're even entertaining these two choices, like, should we get married or should we break up? You should break up.
Right.
I mean, if that's even on the table, do not marry that person. Right. And also, you know, like, even if this was all innocent, like, which it's not, but say, imagine that he really does desperately want to get married, but things keep getting in the way. There's going to be things for the rest of your lives. You know, parents die, friends get divorced, people need help. And if you're a couple and you are a team, you go through those things together. They don't interrupt your relationship. They don't get, you know, it's there. That's never going to go away. There's never going to be a time when you don't have any distractions or any interruptions in your life. Life's only going to get more complicated, and you only get to live one time. And this sounds miserable. He has an attitude with you.
I mean, wanting to marry him.
My God. Run, don't walk away from this horrible person.
Yeah, I want you and the woman whose boyfriend shrieks in horror whenever someone has a period near him to just go on like a long Thelma and Louise style road trip.
Oh my God, seriously?
That's what I want for you. But yeah, no, this is incredibly clear cut. You're not really in a relationship at all. And I think you should go ahead and acknowledge that and say, I'm done. I think that that is the only way that you are going to ever possibly be in a relationship that makes you happy. And don't let the length of your previous relationship convince you to like throw more time into it. You'll just lose more time.
Yeah. Oh man. And she's going to feel so good when she's away from him, you know?
Oh,
and
she's
so going to
realize like,
for her.
Oh, right. Like forward momentum in a relationship isn't weird and impossible. And I don't have to like accommodate someone else's like sudden wild changes in strategy constantly. Like it's not that hard to get married. You know what I mean? Like it can be hard to plan a wedding. There can be a lot, but like people dumber and worse than you, letter writer, get married all the time. it's not hard to get married if you have two people who really want to marry each other. If what you have is one person who wants to get married and one other person who is for whatever reason happy with the status quo, it will seem like, oh, it's just so hard. Life's so dramatic. These things keep getting in the way. And it's like, no, it's not. People get married in prison. People get married at sea. People get married in the midst of like painful diagnoses and when their family members are dying. And during times of war, it is not hard to get married if both people want to get married.
Nope.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, this letter, the subject is intrusive questions in casual conversation. So, dear Prudence, I moved to an English-speaking country full of friendly people. When asked, I am happy to disclose that I'm from the Indian subcontinent. I often get strange comments or questions as a follow-up. I can usually deal with well-intentioned comments expressing surprise at how, quote-unquote, good my English is. But a weird and intrusive follow-up question I've gotten a few times now is, oh, you don't look dark enough to be from there. Were one of your parents white or something? I'm usually left speechless since I'm not used to casual questions about the skin color of one's parents being a topic of conversation among strangers. What is a polite way to respond to this while making it clear that it's not an appropriate question to ask a relative stranger? Oh, God.
Incredible.
People are trash.
Incredible.
God.
Do you think it's necessary to be polite in response to a question like that?
No, I do not. But I believe very much in radical unfriendliness. And I think this is a prime time to bring that forth. Just kind of lean into them kind of semi-menacingly and just say, why don't you fuck off? Now, of course, you can't say that. And it helps that I have a British accent, which is pleasing to many American ears. So
it does confuse us.
It does. Listen, that's the one takeaway from all the reporting I've done in this country is that if you say it with a smile and a charming British accent, you can say the most offensive things. So
you're halfway home. And then I think she told me to fuck myself.
Exactly. It's kind of, I do believe she chose some excellent words and I was seduced. I just think there are times when you have to kind of rein in the urge to kind of go off. And this doesn't feel like one of them. Now, this is a personal thing. I have, obviously, my name is Bim Adewunmi. It's a Nigerian name. It's a Yoruba name. And I have had people compliment me on how well I speak English before. To which I always reply, well, that's lucky because I was born and raised in England and also I'm a journalist. But I think, I don't think you have to be polite when you are telling people that that is an inappropriate question because they haven't done you the courtesy of being polite by asking such a fucking stupid question to begin with. So I always just kind of, I smile very, a very tight smile, you know, and I just kind of go, what do you mean? And then allow them to say the question a second time so they can hear how ridiculous it is. And if they say it again, I go, I'm sorry, I don't understand. What do you mean? Explain it to me like I'm six. And then over and over until you break down quite how foolish their question is and it becomes apparent to them.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Letter writer, you have both of our full permission to be as impolite as you like in response to such a question. If it is not your desire to prolong the conversation, or if you are mostly looking for the quickest way to get out of it, that is also fine. If you don't want to get into it, you don't have to.
That's true.
A great thing that this is not original to me. I have heard this from other people giving advice is just something as simple as like a pause and then you must be so embarrassed to have said that.
Also, very good. Yes, that's good. That's very,
yeah,
very
which
good.
Which is very polite.
It is.
You know, it's not, you're not cursing them out. You are being very clear that they have committed a social like faux pas, which is true. And sometimes it is the politest thing you can do to point out to someone they have just stepped in it. To just say something like, now that you've had a second to think about it, I'm sure you're embarrassed that you asked that question. Let's move on. That makes it clear you're not going to indulge that line of thinking,
right.
But that also doesn't open you up for a sort of back and forth.
If that's all
you want. I think yours is fabulous and would be wonderful if you were sort of like, hey, I have a few minutes. I'm willing to try to get someone to reexamine some of their absurd premises, which is that like one of the largest subcontinents in the world apparently doesn't contain within it a wide variety of possible like phenotypes.
Right. I mean, I've had that. Yeah. I've had someone say to me once when they started off by doing that thing that everyone loves, where they try to guess what my parentage was. And then after getting it wrong like two or three times, I said, okay, Nigeria. And he was like, yep, knew it. You've got the West African face shape. And I was like, whoa, you don't get
wow.
to. Yeah, I was taken aback. Like literally, you know, people use that expression. I was taken aback.
Yeah.
But I was actually taken aback. I think my hand kind of went to my throat in a very dramatic pearl clutching fashion. Like, are you serious? And he said this with like a completely blank look on his face. Like, yep, guessed it, knew it. And I looked at, because he wasn't my friend. He was a friend of a friend. And I looked at my friend as if to say, why am I here? Why is this man here? And if I stabbed him, would you call the cops? Because I was so incensed, but I was also just kind of like, I was dumbfounded. My mouth just wouldn't make sounds. I just could only do like increasingly panicked looks with my eyes. Just kind of right. Like, what is this?
And there's already the sort of like, there's the separate category of dumb shit that a lot of people say, not realizing that the person they're saying it to hears it all the time.
Right.
Right. That depending on your personal level of politeness and the situation, you might be willing to overlook, which in this case, like this letter writer is kind of saying like, yes, a lot of people seem to think that commenting on my English is like information I didn't already have.
Right.
So like, that's already dumb to begin with, right? Like everyone who is speaking a language on purpose is probably reasonably aware of their own facility with that language.
Right.
Right. Like you and I are currently speaking fluently in English at one another. Neither one of us is surprised that that's happening because we both know that we speak English quite fluently.
I mean, that was a social contract. Yes. We came into this knowing we were both going to be speaking English.
Yeah, no one's going to, if you say to anyone, wow, your English is really good, that's not news. Like, they're not going to be like, wow, is it? I had no idea. Here, I thought that you and I were speaking, like, Farsi or binary to one another. Like,
right.
They know. So, again, it's one of those things, like, telling someone they're tall, that, like, they know, they hear that a lot.
Right.
You don't need to say anything about it.
Right.
But this is definitely not in that category. This is, like, completely idiotic, rude, way personal. It violates sort of all the normal first conversation rules we have.
Right.
So there is no need to be polite to this. There is no need to explain to someone. Everyone knows that, right? Like we all know you don't bring up the topic of somebody else's parents' skin color on
right.
the first conversation, especially in the sense of like, I don't believe this skin color could exist in
right.
India. Like,
right.
that's just...
It's also kind of like co-opting your... Like you said, like, I know who my parents are. I know what my family lineage is. I know all of this. So you, a stranger, telling me, oh, you don't look dark enough. Like, are you... Huh? It's just...
And it's like one of the biggest countries in the world. I mean,
right.
again, like, there's so many ways in which it is a dumb, terrible thing to
right.
say. But like,
but also it's like stupid...
Really,
it just betrays,
yeah.
it betrays like a weird centralizing of your knowledge and your, or what you think is your knowledge. And so if someone even slightly deviates from what you assume in your tiny, tiny brain, you know, to be as, you know, that's the correct thing, then it just kind of sets off a series of, you know, explosions in your tiny brain. And so you have to articulate yeah. that by going, you don't look dark enough. And it's just like, shut your whole mouth, your entire
it's
mouth.
It's also like, this was famously a line that like, Michael Scott said on the American version of The Office. And
sure.
like, if you're at that level, it's not like he's meeting Rashida Jones. And he says, like, the first thing he says to her is, wow, you're so exotic looking. Was
Aww.
Your dad a GI? And everyone on screen, like their jaws drop. So like when someone is at that level, you can be polite. That's very great. But you can absolutely just say something like, what an invasive, personal, stupid question.
Yes.
I'm not going to answer that. Why would you ask me that? Anything along those lines, feel free to be, I mean, I don't like slap them in the face and
no.
call them names.
And
but
this,
like short of that, you don't have to worry about being
you
polite.
Don't. I mean, the question that she said specifically was, what is a polite way to respond to this while making it clear? And that's why I chose the option of asking them, what do you
yes.
mean? What do you
yes,
mean?
Yes, because that is very polite.
It is. It's kind of like, no. You know, and you do this with like, just like, you know, a very blank smile. What do you mean? And you look fake interested. Like, oh, I really want to know what you were thinking. So what do you mean? And if you say that with like, you know, when you can hear a smile in someone's voice, I always think if you can hear the smile, what do you mean? And then you can see just how ridiculous. And you do it with wide
right.
eyes, like, you know, Puss in Boots, just the biggest eyes you can. What do you
yeah.
mean?
It will knock out,
you know,
90% of the people who ask that question. They will get flustered and embarrassed.
That's the hope.
There will be at least 10% who will absolutely double down.
Right.
And they will further elaborate. And those people, again, if that comes up, feel free to say, I'm not going to speak to you anymore. Good day. And then go get an hors d'oeuvre or something.
Right. And that's still polite.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, you get the freedom to really like move in a lot of different directions here because they have so seriously flouted the rules of like social engagement.
True.
I have saved my favorite letter for last. And I want you to read it. And I'm so excited. I'm going to stop prefacing this. Just go for it.
The subject is evil toys. This is going to sound like a silly problem, but it's really starting to wear on me. My wife has always been a do-it-yourselfer. She likes taking on projects. It's usually great. We've saved tons of money on contractors over the years. She paints, she files, there's even a little plumbing. Last fall, we had a little girl. She's happy and healthy. My wife, like many first-time parents, went a little overboard into the natural parenting. She makes all of our daughter's baby food and clothes. Everything is organic and ethically sourced. I'm not really sure what that means. This seems to be exhausting, but she never complains, and it seems important to her. The issue is the toys. My wife is convinced that every children's toy comes from China, is made in a sweatshop by child laborers, and is covered in lead paint. She will not let our daughter play with any store-bought toys. Not wanting to deprive her of toys, she has started making them. We've got a set of handmade blocks, a handful of stuffed animals, and a plush doll. It's the doll that's the issue. Our daughter loves it, but it's the creepiest thing I've ever seen. My wife, in her exhausted state, did not do the best job with its face, and it looks a little, well, homicidal. We co-sleep, and I spend many a wakeful night with that creepy thing staring at me. My daughter loves it, and my wife is beyond exhausted, so I can't even gently mention anything critical to her. What do I do?
First of all, you send us a picture of the doll.
Yeah, that's true.
How dare you write us this letter, this descriptive, unsettling letter, and not include a picture of what this face is that you're staring at every night as you try to sleep in your exhausting, miserable home.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, all dolls are, like, they have the potential to look homicidal, you know?
Or, yeah.
Like, they, none of them, they're all
they've
a little
unnerving. They've got pretend faces on them, right? Like,
yeah.
The whole, like, oh, some dolls are creepy and some dolls aren't. All dolls are creepy.
They are. All of them are creepy.
Yeah.
So saying that this one's, like, overtly creepy is, it's a little bothersome.
Yeah. Jasmine, do you think the doll is the issue?
I do. I blame the doll.
You think the doll's the only problem? If they could get rid of the doll, everything would be square?
No, I think he needs to sit down. Because if your wife's, like, making toys and grinding up baby food, like, just deal with it. Like, okay, you don't like this doll that she labored over and, like, drew a face on. I think he's outvoted in this instance. Like, your wife likes the doll. Your daughter likes the doll. You just have to, like, get out of your feelings, sir.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just want to, like, pull out a couple of points from the last paragraph, which is, my wife is exhausted. I can't sleep at night. I can't say anything critical to my wife. That's your problem.
Right.
Not the damn doll. The problem is that your wife has, like, signed up to become super parent and is pouring all of her energy into it to the point where you feel like you cannot say, you can't speak to her because she will, I don't know, fall apart or withdraw or, you know, climb up on the cross.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And I always find these questions really tough. Like, it's one thing when one parent is, like, slacking off and the other parent writes in and they're just like, my partner doesn't help out around the house and I'm exhausted. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, I can offer you tools because you can, like, make demands and stop doing stuff. But it's always hard when somebody writes in and says, my other partner seems miserable, but they insist that they're happy, like, taking on 50 jobs at once and they won't let go of any of it. And I'm always like, oh, that's so much harder to convince someone else that they're exhausted and miserable and doing too much when they're like, nope, totally worth it. I never want my daughter to touch a broccoli that has not first been hand blended by me.
Right. Yeah, it's admirable. But I really want to see the doll. And then part of me does think that if this were a horror movie, he would be the parent that knew. You know what I mean? Like, he knew that the doll was off.
Did you ever see Annabelle? Because there was literally a movie about... Yes, I saw it too,
yeah.
And it was so great. There were so many moments where I was screaming at the screen, like, why did you leave the doll in that room?
Yeah, so I feel like I want to give him horror movie advice, kind of. Like, once one person starts to detect something, you need to get rid of the doll. But...
Oh, my God. Start, like, moving it and putting it in weird places in the house so that you can convince your wife that it's also haunted?
Yeah. Or it may be. We don't know that it isn't. Mallory.
I definitely want to encourage this letter to writer to watch the movie Annabelle with his wife.
Yeah. And then also like all of the progenitors of Annabelle, like Chucky, Child's Play.
Oh my God. I forgot about
Dolly.
Child's
Did
Play.
You ever see Dolly yes. Dearest?
No, I saw Mannequin, but I've never seen Dolly Dearest.
Oh my
Tell
God.
Me everything about
Dolly
it.
Dolly Dearest was like the female doll corollary to Chucky.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You it have to watch the trailer. It is. And she has like this weird, creepy dress, but there's like a legion of them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Dolly Dearest, Child's Play, For Good Measure, Paranormal Activity.
Oh, and yeah.
Also, there was another one with dolls, wasn't it? Insidious.
Yeah. I mean, we've got some great movie recommendations for you. I would also add to that list The Brave Little Toaster. It's not quite toys, but they're all like sentient, inanimate objects in a way that I found really upsetting as a child. And there's a couple of scenes that are really terrifying.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, God. It's like this kid has this cabin, this summer cabin he visits all the time. And he has a couple of like possessions that are obsessed with him. And it's a toaster, a lamp, a clock radio, a blanket, and a vacuum cleaner. And like the kid's family eventually sells the cabin and they move to the city. And the like the objects are so obsessed with being returned to their master that they decide to like journey to the city. And like the first thing that happens is this like very upsetting air conditioner dies in front of them. Like just like in this very, again, like it has like a heart attack and dies and they're all just distressed. And then they have to go find him. And like in the end, he's like happily reunited with his like private property. It's a lot of weird messages for children, namely that like property can love you, and that everything is dying around you and trying to murder you. And it's a lot, but I think you should watch it.
Yeah. Can I say that as a child, I thought all of my toys were, I didn't necessarily think they were trying to harm me, but I definitely thought they were alive. Like I definitely thought that they had a life that they like resumed as soon as I turned my back. So I was constantly in this process of like trying to catch them.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would.
No, like, I think that's universal. I think that's why the Toy Story movies are so popular. And I think there was also, at least on my end, also like not quite a fear of them, but like a healthy fear in the sense that like they need to be placated.
Yeah.
Like if I had like a rotating system whereby certain stuffed animals would get rotated out onto my bed to sleep with at night
me
and the rest
too.
Would go in the closet. And
oh
I
God,
felt like
too.
If one of them spent too many nights in the closet, it would get upset.
Yeah. Same. I definitely harbored that for all my stuffed animals. Like it would be like, okay, like this night the Dalmatian's going to sleep next to me and then like let the brown bear sleep in the closet or on the floor.
I have never felt like more known and affirmed and seen than I do in this moment.
Oh, Mallory.
Thank you.
Yes, I did that with my stuffed animals.
We are getting so far afield from helping this
poor guy.
Oh, okay.
So that's my advice is like, if he's a conspiracy theorist, as I am, then this is like the beginning of a horror movie and they should take his advice and get rid of the doll while they still can. But if he's like a normal, logical person, then I say just get over it and like let his daughter have the doll.
Yeah, I mean, here's how I'm like reading this in between the lines, which is my wife seems to be sleeping through the night. My daughter seems to be sleeping through the night. I'm staying up staring at this doll that they both like. And there's a sense of like my wife is exhausted, but not willing to give any of this up. My daughter's enjoying herself. They have this connection. My wife's like knocking herself out to make my daughter happy. And I feel isolated, left out of the decision making process.
Right.
And like I'm the only person who's not enjoying the situation. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty big deal. And I want to like point out that like, A of all, having a newborn is always rough, even on like a great relationship. So, you know, be a little gentle on both of you, like, especially with your first kid. Of course, there's going to be like a desire to be super mom. And think through like what's really bothering you, right? Like if it's the co-sleeping, mm-hmm. and your wife is like co-sleeping forever, I want her to sleep with us until she goes to college. And you're like, I'm over it. I want her to sleep in her own room. Like, then you need to like tell her and not in the sense of like, babe, I need to set a limit. It's time to draw the line. Cause this is, I think, the first conversation you're having about it. But to say like, this is not working for me. I'm unhappy. And I also want to like affirm our commitment to each other. And I also like, you got to ask yourself, you know, is your wife taking on all these projects because you're kind of like checked out around the house? Like, and maybe she's crowding you out. I don't pretend to know your situation, but ask, like, am I doing nearly as much for our daughter as she is? And mm-hmm. is part of her driving herself to exhaustion because she feels like if she doesn't do it, I won't care enough about our daughter to, like, do that. So, like, there might be ways in which she needs to, like, bring it down a little. Like, it's probably okay mm-hmm. to, like, touch a toy that came from a store.
Yeah.
And it's also okay for her to say, like, I really feel strongly about our daughter eating organic food. And you can just be like, fine. Like, great.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's true.
But yeah, figure out what's not working and then talk to your wife. And you say, like, you can't even gently mention anything critical to her. That sucks. But I can tell you the worst response you could have to that is never say anything critical to her mm-hmm. and then stay up sleepless night after sleepless night and get resentful because that's when shit really hits the fan. And so, like, have this conversation out of the house. Have it when you're not, like, sleep deprived. Maybe get somebody to look after your baby for a couple of hours and just say, like, these things are hard for me and I've been scared to talk to you about it because I feel like I'm afraid of your reaction. And mm-hmm. like, if she has a tough time, like, let her have an emotional response, let her tell her how you feel, and, like, just say, like, I want to be a team. My goal is for the two of us to feel united, not divided by our kid. Obviously that's going to be hard because children are just, like, designed to tear couples apart. But yeah, like, you have to, because if you don't say something gently critical to her now, you will pull away and in the future you will feel like you don't know your own wife, or you will say something incredibly, incredibly, like, hurtful because you've driven yourself to a point where you're like, I can't do this another second and I don't want that for you.
Okay. Yeah, that's so much better advice than mine, which is like...
I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of pretending that it's haunted.
Yeah. And we don't know that it isn't, again, Mallory.
I actually want to say, like, all of these letter writers may be haunted. Like, a ghost could absolutely be behind all of these situations. Also, if you are tempted to secretly throw away the doll and pretend it got lost, please don't do that. That's not going to end well.
You don't think so?
No, I feel like every advice columnist has to figure out, are you the kind of advice columnist who occasionally advocates little white lies or, like, for the greater good, getting rid of something? Or are you the kind that's like, no, hard line, total disclosure, total honesty? And I didn't think I realized this about myself, but I think I fall a little closer to the total disclosure, everyone has a right to know side of things, which is too bad. I wish I was more chill. I wish I was a little more like, look, life's all about compromise. It's a slow slide to the grave and honesty is impossible. Just do what you got to do to make it through the day. Let's tackle the last voicemail of the day. We can end on a slightly lighter note. This is great, actually. I'm really excited to listen to this one.
Hey, Prudence. I am wondering about dinner time conversation with my husband. He loses his appetite really easily if there's any kind of difficult subject or gross subject that comes up. And this kind of came to a head the other day because we don't see each other very often. I work 9 to 5 and he works 5 to 11 o'clock. And so I make him a really late dinner and then go to bed. And so the only time we get to really see each other is when he's eating dinner at 11 o'clock at night. And a few days ago, I mentioned the Mensa's product that has just come out and how ridiculous it was. And he got so angry at me for bringing up this product for the glue for your vagina. And he got really mad. And I don't think he should have gotten mad. But I know that he doesn't like hearing about, like, bodily fluids or anything when he's eating. Is it something that I need to stop talking about if there's a current issue and it's potentially gross when he's eating? How can I have a conversation with him about current events and remember to not bring up something that could potentially be gross?
So, Ben, I looked up vaginal glue as the result of this voicemail, and it sounds like you did not. So you are
I did not.
Still, like, tabula rasa when it comes to vaginal glue.
I am a clean slate when it comes to vaginal glue.
So It is allegedly a product that was created by a chiropractor named Daniel Dops. To me, it reads like, a relatively on its face joke or troll. But mm-hmm. people at present are discussing it as if it may be an actual product. It is basically a glue stick for a vagina. So the idea is to glue your vagina shut while you are menstruating, ridding yourself of the need for pads or tampons or a diva cup. He claims that there is some way to dissolve the glue at the end of the day and thereby release all the sort of like built up menstrual fluid. And then you can like later reapply. I just want to read a little bit, by the way, of the sort of Facebook post he made about it.
Oh, my God.
And it's just as follows. Yes, I am a man, and you as a woman should have come up with a better solution than diapers and plugs, but you didn't. Reason being, women are focused on and distracted by your period 25% of the time, making them far less productive than they could be. Women tend to be more creative than men, but their period that stifles them and plays with their head. When men see seals in the blood and fluids, they are sterile as long as they are inside the body, and all the grossness is from the leakage into undergarments, the drying effects of air, and the bacteria contamination that comes along with inserting tampon, plugs, and pads. My dream is to have women free of the distractions, the psychological issues that goes along with their periods, and see that they develop. So, just to be clear, this is not a case of, like, this woman is, like, occasionally discussing, like, straightforward menstrual products and her husband is doing that sort of like, oh, gross periods that sometimes people do. This is like a pretty out there goof.
I agree with your assessment that this is a troll.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a grad school art project that went concept art project that went horribly wrong and viral.
Art.
Yeah. This is totally performance
but
art.
I kind of loved, by the way, the caller at the end was like, how am I supposed to talk about current events if he's so sensitive?
That.
As if, like, the menses is this, like, very important issue we're all discussing at the dinner table, and it's really unreasonable of her husband to demand that she lay off. Like,
right. Everyone around the studios keeps talking about these menses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, no. I
can't go anywhere without hearing about these menses.
I'm kind of on your husband's side. Like, that's pretty gross. Like, I think it's funny. Like, I'd enjoy talking about it, but some people get made easily nauseous. And I think hearing, like, some whacked out chiropractor talk about, like, pretty nonsensical, medically inaccurate descriptions of fluids and plugs is sort of gross. And you only get to see your husband at dinner, and it's a pretty reasonable request. And the description of the vaginal glue is pretty gross. Like, I'm willing to go there. I think that guy was being kind of gross. Like, I understand why your husband was like, can we not talk about this weirdo?
Totally. And also, as am I allowed to talk about current events? I agree with that assessment that there's plenty of other things to talk about.
I gotta be me, man. And I gotta be me. Don't stifle me, man.
Right.
You're like the vaginal glue for my mouth.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But I just imagined the caller kind of going there.
Yeah. But also, it seems like as the caller is describing this, that this is not the first instance of bringing up something that her husband has found unpalatable during his dinner, which is at 11 p.m. on a very tough work schedule, and seems like, I don't know, at least in my opinion, a very sacred time to, like, enjoy eating food with your significant other. I don't know how else to say, but yeah, there's just plenty of other things to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think that your husband's request of, like, hey, don't bring up poop while I'm eating lasagna, I think that that's within reason.
Yeah. And so, of course, like, I'm kind of curious because, you know, the caller definitely sounded put upon. And I feel like there may be something else going on here. I don't know exactly what it is, but it certainly sounds like this caller feels stifled and put upon. And I'm curious, like, if there's something else going on, maybe with your guys' opposing work schedules, maybe you resent being the one who makes dinner every night. I don't know what else is going on, but it seems like your husband's made a fairly reasonable request And your response is like, well, then can I talk about anything? And it's like, yeah, right. You can. So is there something else going on here? Do you resent your husband for something else? Are you frustrated with the work schedules? Do you feel like he often doesn't think things are funny that you think are funny, and you kind of resent his sense of humor because you wish he understood you better? Like, yeah, I think his request is reasonable and you should try to accommodate it. And I think you should ask yourself, is there something else you're mad about here? And if so, what is it? And how could you bring it up with your husband without the sort of deflection of vaginal glue?
Right. And I think your assessment of that there's probably something going on with the senses of humor and the nature of interest and inquiry into the world around us that's not quite lining up with the caller's husband, that I think is that's worth talking about. That's worth getting into. And it's totally fine if it doesn't completely match up. I mean, that's something I've learned from having longtime partnerships is that it's totally okay if you don't have the same sense of humor. But there are sometimes pressure points where that comes up. And yeah, it's a way of dealing fairly and without feeling like the other person's telling you to shut up.
So, yeah, I think we've kind of addressed that as best we can. I just want to point out, I've been sort of clicking around on the Menzies website while we've been having this conversation. And some further evidence that this is, again, somebody making some jokes is if you go to the contact section of the website, it says, our products are still in development and will be available soon. Ask your favorite retailer to stock Menzies. So there's no way to buy them. But this guy does want us to like wander into a Walgreens and be like, do you guys sell vaginal lipstick yet?
That's a totally different product.
that's what he calls it. He says it's vaginal lipstick. If you don't mind, I'd love to read actually a little bit of the description from the website.
Which is
as follows. Menzies is a new patented idea. Idea is in all caps and with three exclamation points. A natural approach to feminine health. Menzies is a proprietary combination of amino acids and natural oils in a lipstick applicator. It is not a glue. The labia minora are normally attracted to each other, and they stick together a little bit. When applied, Menzies only enhances that attraction and creates a temporary seal strong enough to retain menstrual fluids inside in the same location that a tampon would. The seal washes away with soap or urine, and everything empties into the toilet or shower. Dry off and reapply Menzies feminine lipstick. Done. Safe and secure. No touch, no leaks. Better for the environment. No surprises at the worst time. Menzies and the labia form a perfect seal such that there is no sensation of stretching or pulling with normal activity. You can compare it to chewing with your mouth closed. Yeah, I mean, leaving aside the fact that chiropractors don't have to go to medical school, I think you would still have enough of a sense of working knowledge of the human anatomy that you would know that urine does not come out through the vagina and therefore would not be able to dissolve the seal on your labia minora.
That part of the product hasn't quite been fully developed yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we can get the lips closed, but it's kind of up to you how you...
Yeah. It's going to be, you know, you make the call how you're going to dissolve the seal. From haunted dolls to vaginal glue, this certainly was an episode of the Dear Prudence Show, and you certainly listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul. Thanks for listening to this special Greatest Hits episode of Dear Prudence. It was essentially an Eagles reunion tour. Today you heard from Lindy West, Bim Adewunmi, Jasmine Sanders, and Ben Gullard. We'll be back with new questions and new answers next week. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops.